There are a lot of ways that we can lead a healthier lifestyle, certainly eating better, exercising, get more sleep. Those things are all important. Hands down, I think one of the most important things you can do for your health is to stop smoking if you smoke. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Mike Fiore, professor of medicine and director of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, is our guest today to talk about how to successfully stop smoking. Can also talk up. There's a new study, a research project that's going on relating, or will be going on relating to quitting smoking. And maybe I'm sure you're going to be interested in learning about that, whether you smoke or not. I think it's a really interesting study. We'll learn about that as well. And certainly answer your questions. Are you a current smoker? Would you like to quit? Or have you tried unsuccessfully before? Or maybe you're a former smoker. Love to hear from you, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And Dr. Mike Fiore, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me back on, Larry.
How many smokers are there estimated in the U.S. now and in Wisconsin?
Well, about 19% of adults smoke, and that percentage is the same for both Wisconsin, more or less, and the full United States. So we're very reflective of the population. That's really a good news story, Larry, when we compare it to the 1960s, when smoking rates were at their peak, about 45% of adults smoke. So we've cut it from 45% to 19%. But what's important to remember that those are still here in Wisconsin, about 800,000 smokers. Nationwide, about 43 million smokers. And as you said at the top of the hour, Larry, there is nothing that puts our health at greater risk. Just to put it in some context, if we take a group of 100 smokers, fully 50 of them, half of them, are going to be killed prematurely by a disease directly caused by their smoking, on average robbing them of 15 years of life. There is nothing that I as a physician treat that carries with it a 50% mortality rate for such a large number of people. That's why it's so important. And, of course, it's not just that smoking kills you. Unfortunately, the going from life to death for a smoker is a miserable experience. And being short of breath, having a heart attack or a stroke, cancer, it's a bad news story, but I know what we're here to talk about today is how do we prevent all of that and help as many Wisconsin residents to successfully quit.
And we've had some good success. There are some good opportunities out there to quit smoking, Dr. Fiore.
Yeah, without a question. And I'm going to focus, Larry, because so many people at the beginning of the year think about quitting. Yeah, the holidays are over, all of the activities and the stress. I sometimes think of it as now that New Year's here, you got to give yourself a gift, and that gift is quitting smoking. So I'm going to focus on three things that I think can make a difference.
Okay.
First, we're going to talk about the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line. Secondly, the importance of seeing your doctor because she can help you in very special ways. And then thirdly, a new program, a new study that we announced yesterday and today, a $10 million grant to the UW Medical School to help Wisconsin residents to quit.
So there's lots of positives.
Without a question. And maybe to start with the quit line, here in Wisconsin, anyone, anywhere, can pick up the phone, dial 1-800-QUIT-NOW, 1-800-QUIT-NOW, and get access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to a trained counselor who will then help them every step of the way to quit. 200,000 Wisconsin smokers have already called. It's been very helpful to Wisconsin smokers. In addition to the counseling, they will send you a 2-week free supply of either the nicotine patch, gum, or lozenge. They'll send you self-help materials, and they'll give you a number to call back when you're having a hard time, if you are, as you're trying to quit. So the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line, a free service to anyone in our state, is a wonderful way to start.
Oh, excellent. We have several people online who to visit with you, so let's take some calls. Jack in Eagle River has been waiting a while. So,
yeah, hi.
Hi, Jack.
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I thought I'd give you a quick summary of my experience as a quitter. In 1989, I had smoked for about 40 years, and I had tried to quit, as many people do, and unsuccessfully, and I really analyzed the situation on New Year's 1989, and I said, you know, what's the first thing you want when you have a cup of coffee? What's the first thing you want when you have a cocktail? Well, we all know usually there's a strong linkage there between alcohol and tobacco. So I quit all three for 1 month. And I got through that month, and I gradually reintroduced the coffee and the alcohol. And I can offer this to people who say, I can't do that. After that month, you're going to enjoy that cup of coffee without a cigarette and a cocktail without a cigarette. And believe me, that's worth it.
Hmm.
Well, Jack, I just got to say that, first of all, congratulations. What a great model for all the other people who are thinking about taking advantage of New Year's to quit. You know, in our clinical program here at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, we do exactly what you recommend regarding alcohol. And we urge everyone to give up, not for the rest of their lives, but for 1 month of alcohol. And here's why. When we talk to Wisconsin smokers who have tried to quit and have relapsed or returned to smoking, half of them were drinking at the time they had their first puff of cigarette smoke during the relapse. It is a powerful link. Coffee is as well. It worked for you. That's great. I get sometimes a little concerned for folks maybe pulling too much stuff back. I think for sure it makes sense on the alcohol side, and on the coffee side, you might want to just have that in your back pocket as another thing to consider. But what you're pointing out, Jack, is that we have links in our lives that are associated with smoking. And as few as a couple weeks away from them, we begin to break those links. And as you say, at that point, you can go back to these activities without it being such a powerful drive to have a smoke.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you very much, Jack, for calling. I want to give some others a chance to join in. Appreciate your comments. John in Algoma, let's turn to you next. Hi, John.
Hi. Interesting topic, and certainly one that I care a great deal about. I've lost 5 members of my family to lung cancer, and they were all smokers. And I've watched that, which is a very slow, painful death for both the person who is passing on as well as the family members who have to watch it. And that in and of itself can be a great incentive. However, most of those people died after I quit. I'd smoked for 17 years, 16 years actually, and started smoking when I was just went off to college. Thought that was part of being an adult and looking sophisticated, and became a very heavy smoker. Smoked 3 packs a day. People, I don't think, could recognize me without a cigarette in my hand. But it was a complicated process to quit, and a lot of things your guest has said are in things which are being now provided publicly to people, I think, are really important to quitting. I set up a situation where I told everyone I was going to quit. I told them I was going to quit on my 35th birthday and sort of created my own peer pressure to quit. I changed the cigarettes I smoked. I actually began going to a restaurant where they did not allow people to smoke before I quit, so I could break the habit of having a cup of coffee and a cigarette after I'd had my meal. And also discovered that there were natural food people. In this case, it happened to be the Seventh-day Adventists, and I'm not a religious person, but they had a program. And they had a health food restaurant and this is back in the 70s, late 70s, I think, wouldn't allow people to smoke there. And my wife started dragging me to this place for lunch as a way to break me of the habit of smoking at lunch. And so ultimately, I got to my 35th birthday, had three cigarettes on my birthday, two the next day, one after that, and haven't had one since. And it's now 31 years later. So it can be done. It's awful. But I think all of those different things, social support, changing diet, changing habits, are all critical to making it work for people. It was the most wonderful thing I did for my health. I had pneumonia 2 years in a row prior to quitting, and haven't had it since. So it makes an enormous change in your health, and I'm really glad to see us talking about it, and also the supports that are out there now. There were very few when I was quitting.
Yeah. John, it's a great story, isn't it, Dr. Fiore?
Yeah, it's a great story, John. And you know, you highlighted three things that are cornerstones to the scientific evidence about how to quit successfully. One is the importance of social support. You don't need to do this on your own, and frankly, you shouldn't do it on your own. We don't ask people to control their diabetes on their own. We provide them with education and support, and that's important for quitting smoking. You change your diet and other habits. Breaking up the routines, as we talked about a couple minutes ago, is another important one. But you also pointed out, John, you were a 3-pack per day smoker. That's an enormous amount of cigarettes. And you went through, I'm sure, a miserable nicotine withdrawal syndrome because of that. And what we have differently than in the late 70s is we now have medicines that aren't magic bullets. They don't automatically turn you into a non-smoker, but they minimize or mitigate at least the withdrawal symptoms. And there are 5 nicotine medicines, 3 of them over the counter, the patch, the gum, and the lozenge. And then there are 2 pills, bupropion and varenicline. Varenicline, some people know as Chantix. These medicines, again, not magic bullets, but will 3-5-fold increase your likelihood of success if you're committed, if you do the other stuff. So thanks for all those good suggestions, John.
If I could toss one other thing in here.
Sure.
On this line, I just thought of 2 other things I did, one which I think is very positive and one which people may find a bit bizarre. The positive thing is that I said, well, I figured out how much money I was spending on cigarettes. And I said, well, I've always wanted to have a sailboat, and I priced out a small used sailboat, figured out how much it was, and figured out even back then that I could buy a sailboat on the savings that I would make from not smoking in 2 years. And so that was my promise to myself. It was my big incentive. After I quit for 6 months, I knew I was never going to smoke again. And so I went out and bought that sailboat, and I've been sailing ever since.
That's a great story. And just, Larry, to put this in context, back in the 70s, you know, you can get a pack of cigarettes for probably a buck or two. Today in Wisconsin, the average pack of cigarettes costs $7. What that means is that for a pack-a-day smoker, John was a 3-pack per day smoker, but a pack a day smoker, there you're spending $200 in after tax money on cigarettes. That's $2,400 a year, and all of us can think of so many things we'd rather do. So that financial, and we often say, you know, put that $5 or $7 a day you were spending on your smokes in a jar, because you could take a trip, you could do all sorts of wonderful things for yourself.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. I guess the one last thing I would say is that I also promised myself, and this is the bizarre side of it, I realized that I was killing myself. I saw it in people around me. I could tell it in my health. And I said, you know, why should I kill myself slowly? You know, if I'm killing myself. So I actually promised myself that, you know, it was the equivalent of putting a .45 in my mouth every time I picked up a cigarette. And that image is so horrifying to me that it became another reinforcement that you know, if you're going to kill yourself slowly, why not get it over with? And that image comes up every time I think of picking up a cigarette, and I still do.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for calling, John. I appreciate it. And I want to give some others a chance to join in, but I want to remind you, as you listen in here, we're talking about successfully stopping smoking with Dr. Mike Fiore, professor of medicine, director of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about successfully stopping smoking with Dr. Mike Fiore. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in today. Question or comment or an experience to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And we have Tom in Fond du Lac up next. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I wanted to relate my experience. I smoked for 20 years. I started when I was 15, quit when I was 35. I quit in 1970. And what was very helpful to me, and I had tried many times before, I started on a Saturday morning, and I had a list of all the undesirable things I had been putting off for a long time, like painting the storm windows and cleaning the basement, and I had a list that would take me through the entire weekend. And I just did all those chores, which would keep my mind off of my smoking. And Monday morning, I was on the road, and my first client and I would always smoke a cigarette together. And I got through that experience without smoking. And in my mind, I knew at that time I actually could do this. And even though I still wanted to smoke, that was very valuable self-knowledge. And it worked for me, and that was before the days of any AIDS. And I quit cold turkey, and I haven't smoked a thing since. So,
Tom, that's a great insight. And again, we're hearing from Larry, all of our callers, really helpful hints. And I think one of the unifying themes are change your routine.
Yeah.
You don't need to do it for the rest of your life, but those first couple days when tobacco withdrawal is at its peak, you want to change your routine. And another thing that we've heard that I want to emphasize that is a real smart thing that our callers are sharing is make the plan before you quit. Because once you're quit and you're in tobacco withdrawal, it's heck, and it's a tough road. So you want to have a bunch of things in your back pocket that you could pull out. And of course, one of those is taking advantage of the counselors at the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's the quit line number. And you can get help 24 hours a day.
Yep.
Right? And we actually posted that. We have that posted up on our Facebook page if you forgot it. But it's 1-800-QUIT-NOW. We have Wendy in Hawkins with a comment. Wendy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I happen to enjoy smoking, and I've heard of people that died of lung cancer that never smoked in their life, and I believe the crap they put in the food will give you cancer before a cigarette will, and the air we breathe is no better. And in the 50s and 40s, maybe even 60s, they didn't put all the chemicals they do in cigarettes, you know, like they do now. And I happen to enjoy smoking, and I think it should be up to the individual. And I think the worst ban they made was not smoking in a bar.
Hmm. Well, that's what's great about Wisconsin and America. It's a free country. And Wendy, I you know, we respect your perspective. Let me just respond with another perspective and some of the science. The first is, without a question, there are people who die of lung cancer who have never smoked. But here's what we know. 90% of lung cancer is directly caused by smoking. 90%. That means 100,000 Americans are killed by lung cancer every year from smoking. We, in fact, don't have anything that puts our health at the same risk as smoking. And finally, to the issue of secondhand smoke and the fact that individuals, all bars and restaurants and work sites in Wisconsin are smoke-free, that's not to tell a person that they can't smoke. What it is to protect innocent non-smokers from the dangers of secondhand smoke. Each year in the United States, 50,000 people die from secondhand smoke. And just as I wouldn't have the right to go into a bar in Wisconsin and sprinkle asbestos dust because of how dangerous it would be, similarly, we shouldn't put deadly secondhand smoke out there. But Wendy, you have the freedom to smoke as long as you want.
We have an email from Michelle in Sparta. My stepdaughter abhorred smoking when she was 16 years old, but now she's a smoker. When she was 16, she was so upset about a friend who started to smoke, but about a year later, we could tell that she was smoking secretly. Do you have any advice on what to tell or show her? It doesn't seem like she wants to quit. We have three young boys that adore her, and we would hate for the boys to see her smoking.
Yeah.
That's a sad one.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Your stepdaughter is has to come to it on their own. The one thing we know is that we can't shove smoking cessation down your throat. But I think the key thing to let them know is and I know we have to break at the bottom of the hour, Larry. Is that correct?
We need to break in a while. That's
okay.
All right.
Because here are some strategies that you can use to help a person. Let them know that you'll be there when and if they're willing to try to quit. Secondly, talk a bit. Is there anything about smoking that they don't like? And really focus in on that and sort of the... And why would you smoke? And then point out some of the benefits that they'll experience as a result of quitting. I'd be positive, I'd be supportive, but I would not try to shove it down their throat because, unfortunately, that just doesn't work.
Stephanie from Ashland smoked for 9 years, finally quit in August of 2012. She now runs half marathons and cross-country skis and does yoga. She says, I'm a very healthy eater and even quit drinking altogether. I'm 27 years old. What is my risk of developing smoking-related illness if I maintain my current lifestyle? And she quit for 9 years. No, I'm sorry, she smoked for 9 years and then just quit this past August. So.
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations, Stephanie. You're doing all the right things. There's a lot of things in your favor. First, you quit when you were young, so you quit earlier. The benefits accrue irrespective of your age, but they're greater when you quit younger. You smoked for less than 10 years. That's also a positive. And your risk of a heart attack will decline by 50% next August when you're a year out. Your risk of lung cancer will approach that of a never smoker 15 years after you quit. You already are experiencing the increased exercise capacity that everybody feels within a month after quitting. So you've done what you need to do, and you will accrue the benefits with every day that goes by.
And thanks very much for that email. Leslie in Gale, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. Thanks, Larry, for taking my call. And
sure.
Hi to your guest.
Hi.
I've been smoking for 39 years, and I quit a year and a half ago and have been smoke-free since.
Excellent.
So, well, yeah. And you know, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do, and it took me 8 tries. But I wanted to point out something that I, just from my observations of going through this experience, and I say that lightly, is I think women are just wired differently than men in this, quitting this habit for some reason. I've had friends of mine that are still smoking. But I just from communicating with them and knowing guys that have quit smoking, we're just wired differently. And for some reason, it's more of a emotional baggage. And I'm wondering if you've touched on that piece of it today, the psychological piece between men and women.
Hmm.
From my experience, I do landscape design, and I have off in the wintertime. So every winter, I took that opportunity at my least stressed time to quit. And so basically what I was doing for myself is just practicing, undoing all the habits that I did. And eventually, it worked for me. And this last time, I did take an antidepressant, which really, really helped me. But I know I'm done. I know after 39 years of smoking, and it was the hardest thing I had to do. But I tell you something, I feel so much better.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, well, that's go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to say, if you did touch on that, I apologize. But just in curiosity, the emotional, psychological, and I did hear the woman that said she likes to smoke. And honestly, I can appreciate that. I think any smoker who has tried to quit can appreciate the, I'm just going to say, everybody has a right to do what they want to do. And I certainly didn't want people telling me what to do too. But I think deep, 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 deep down in people's hearts, they don't want to do this because you are a slave.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to be that. So really, that's all I had to say, and I thank you so much for this program.
Thank you, Leslie.
Yeah, Leslie, that was a great story. And, when we talk to smokers in Wisconsin, 80% of them tell us they regret ever starting and want to quit and have tried at least once. So most smokers are like you, Leslie, that and you were. Not just deep down, but deep down felt strongly you wanted to get this monkey off your back. I think your statement about being a slave is truly what tobacco dependence does to people. And to have that personal success of breaking free and becoming a free person again is a powerful one. Men and women do differ in terms of their smoking and what leads them. I wouldn't even generalize to just men or just women. I think people who are smokers are individuals first and foremost, and there's not a one-size-fits-all. But in general, women seek out and benefit more from social support, which I think you refer to some degree. Your story, I think, was really important because it's a story of hope. And we learn every time we try to quit. So don't give up. Keep at it. You're smarter. You're stronger for your past efforts. You will make it. There are more ex-smokers in the United States today, about 60 million, than there are current smokers, about 45 million. So join that group that has been able to successfully quit.
And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. I wanted to make sure we spent a bit of time talking about this new grant, that $10 million National Institutes of Health grant that you've received, Mike.
Well, thanks, Larry, for letting me mentioning that. The UW School of Medicine and Public Health for about 20 years now has provided an opportunity for people who want to quit to participate in programs funded by the National Institutes of Health and others. So this new grant we're really excited about. We're going to be enrolling a total of 1,500 Wisconsin smokers, primarily from Milwaukee and the Madison region, because you have to come into our research sites. We're going to do three things. We're going to give everybody a one-on-one coach to help them every step of the way break free of tobacco dependence. Secondly, we're going to give everyone real active medicine, and we're going to compare three different types of medicine. And thirdly, we're going to do a very extensive array of medical tests so that we can look at you at baseline when you start the study before you quit look at your carotid arteries, your lungs, your diabetes risk, your cholesterol status, help you quit, and then a year and 3 years later, repeat all the tests so we can document better not only that smoking is harmful, but the benefits of quitting. So all of these treatments are free.
And there's no placebo.
Right. Everybody gets real treatment in this study, which is unusual. Anybody who's interested, and I know you'll be able to put it up on your website, Larry, but you could call our number, which is 1-866-END-CIGS, E-N-D-C-I-G-S, or it's real easy to sign up on our website, which is www.endcigs.com, E-N-D-C-I-G-S.com.
And so if you're probably within an easy drive of somewhere in the Milwaukee area or the Madison area,
correct,
that's going to be the way to do it. And as you say, you're going to get some great medical treatment or, you know, examinations. So and that's not going to cost anything.
No, we're talking about a couple $1,000s worth of medical tests, and we're sharing all those results. It includes a stress test, a cardiac stress test. We're going to be giving about $500 worth of free medication. And, of course, so many people really love having a coach to work with them every step of the way as they quit.
Well, that's a great one. We'll have all that information, or I think we already have it up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. If you didn't get it, please go right there and take a look. You know, David has an interesting question here from an email. How can the government promote quitting and support it, sometimes with funding, yet provide massive tobacco subsidies and collect huge amounts of tax money on it as well?
Yeah. So it's a great point. Importantly, though, the tobacco subsidies have now ended. They ended a couple years ago, so that's not the case. But we do have a paradox, and we have it here in Wisconsin. Our state collects about $600 million a year in cigarette excise taxes.
Wow.
$600 million per year. And frankly, we know that raising the price through tax serves to drive down smoking. I think that's a positive. But what I think we don't do, and what we need to do better in Wisconsin, is give some of that money back to Wisconsin smokers who want to quit. So how much do we spend of that $600 million in taxes to help people quit and prevent kids from starting? Just $5 million. So it's a bit of a disconnect between how much we're taking from smokers and how much we're giving back. And I sure would love, and particularly as we're coming into the part of the legislative season that considers such issues, a consideration of whether it may be time to provide more support to help smokers to quit and prevent kids from starting.
And Bruce in Oshkosh has a comment relating
to...
Yeah, hi, Bruce.
Hi. I noticed when my wife started smoking after our 10-year-old was born that when I took a puff so we'd taste alike at bedtime, the first puff, all the muscles would fall off my bones, and the second puff, I got a tingle right straight down my center line into my lap. So I called the Tobacco Resource Center in Madison, and they told me specifically can get hooked with just 5 cigarettes because nicotine goes to the same place in your brain where you experience orgasm. That explains 2 of the things we heard about earlier. Men and women are different, but it also tells you why nicotine is so addictive.
What do you think?
Well, you know, it goes into the dopaminergic system in the brain, which is also the one that where we experience pleasure in general. Here's a statistic that people don't often hear about smoking. It's not one about lung cancer, but it's one about impotence. And the leading cause of impotence and inadequate erections is smoking. And most people who quit find that it's sort of the equivalent of Viagra in some ways.
And David, Facebook says he hasn't had a cigarette in 6 days. Good for you. What do you think about e-cigarettes?
Well, you know, a lot of people have tried them, and some people have tried them with success. You know, Larry, from having been on the show so many times in the past, I'm not a purist about how people quit. I'm just supportive of anybody who's able to do it, including if they do it with e-cigarettes. The reason why we don't recommend e-cigarettes is they just haven't been tested. We don't know what's in them. There have been some early studies that have raised some concerns about some pulmonary toxicity from them. They're made by lots of different companies, and they vary in their dose. And if instead you have 7 FDA-tested and approved medications, my advice always is to use something that's been tested and approved. But frankly, if someone quits with e-cigarettes, more power to them.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, Dr. Fiore, and we just our quit line. We've got, and actually, David, who's now it's been 6 days. David, if you feel the need to go to the quit line, you can get some help right there at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's good for David or anybody else who's applying to quit or is kind of in that process right now.
Without a question.
And thanks again. And we will post information we already have posted on my Facebook page. How to apply for or learn more about the new study that really involves some wonderful medical treatment as well as a great opportunity for you to quit smoking. Dr. Mike Fiore, our guest, and I know he'll be back and we'll do this again. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, that was a hopeful conversation, wasn't it? It seems like there's a lot of help out there for people who want to quit smoking. Coming up next, we're going to learn how to kick another habit that's constantly being connected to our computers and our other gadgets. Joanne Canner knows a lot about cyber overload and the perils of trying to do too many things at the same time. She's been a guest before. We always had a lot of fun with her, and I know you're going to find this very interesting. So stay tuned here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.